Now we have the opportunity to learn about the Dhamma, to sit here and make our minds peaceful. We learn about this meeting with goodness, meeting with a wise person, one who has a good mind. And we understand the fool to be one with a bad mind. In this fool, there's the inner fool and the outer fool. Just like the wise person, there's the inner wise person and the outer wise person. So the outer fool we have seen already. We can see the differences between the outer fool and the outer wise person. And the Buddha taught us to meet with the wise person and to avoid the fools. Just like in the Mangala Sutta, Sevana Japalanang Panditanancha Sevana. To not associate with fools and to associate with the wise. This is the highest blessing in our life. So the fool, they act, speak, and think in bad ways. They lead one's mind to go on a bad path. They lead one to also do bad actions of body, speech, and mind. And the wise person, they think and speak and act in good ways. And so we endeavor, or knowing this, we endeavor to meet with the wise, to associate with the wise. And we ourselves are wise people because we've come to practice, to train our minds. So just like in worldly subjects, there's various subjects that we can learn and study. And then we become a wise person in that subject. And so in the same way we learn, study the Dhamma, we can become a wise person in the Dhamma. So when we're wise in terms of the Dhamma, we see that we've come together, a great many people, a lot of people, we've all gathered together here. And so we have love and kindness for one another. We don't latch on to the wrongdoings of others, but we just keep a watch over our own mind only. We keep a watch over our own mind to see, is our behavior of body, speech, and mind good? So sometimes we do good, we speak in good ways. So this is virtue on the level of bodily and speech behavior. But then we still have bad thoughts sometimes, and that's normal. So sometimes we are finding fault with others, and this is a characteristic of the defilements of the kilesas. And so we practice not to associate with this inner fool in our own minds. And this inner fool is the defilements, the kilesas. And the wise person in our own mind is the Noble Eightfold Path. So one practices to develop the path, this path of virtue, collectedness and wisdom, sila, samadhi, panya. So we do that, and that brings our mind to goodness. So if one is a fool, one just has this feeling of seeking out hurt or harm, vengeance, painful or hurt feelings, not accepting others. So we have to warn our own minds and teach ourselves. Well, why is this? Because if one lacks Dhamma, then one's not able to meet with success. So one with Dhamma is able to see clearly. And so when we come to practice together, we teach ourselves, we watch over our own minds. So we see that we've come together, we've gathered as a group, and we've come from many countries, many places, many families. And so we have different thoughts from one another, different ways of thinking. But we practice not to find fault with one another, but instead to have harmony, to live together as one. So this quality of harmony is important. Finding fault, it's an obstacle in Dhamma practice. So there's one occasion, it was a disciple of Venerable Ajahn Mun. So he had this habit of fault finding. And when they were on alms round, Venerable Ajahn Mun taught that this quality of fault finding, it's an obstruction to seeing Nibbana, it's an obstacle. And so hearing this teaching, this individual had mindfulness arise, and so he changed himself to no longer find fault with others. So in terms of Dhamma practice, this finding of fault, it's an obstruction to realizing peace and collectedness, to realizing samadhi. The samadhi doesn't gather. And when the samadhi doesn't gather, then wisdom does not arise. So therefore, in the beginning, we have to change our minds, change our habits. So we practice not to have bad intentions or wishing to harm. So we're in society and we look at the present day society, there's a lot of wishing to harm, a lot of malintent. But at least on this retreat, we strive for goodness and wholesomeness. We strive not to have unwholesome behavior, not to seek out hurt or harm, but instead striving to make our minds peaceful, peaceful and collected in samadhi. So we don't receive a lot of news. And in this way, our mind can come to know peace and stillness, to know samadhi. So we're in a peaceful place. This is what we call viveka, seclusion. This is bodily seclusion, kaya viveka. Even we have many people all sitting in the same room together, but we're not speaking a lot. And so this is seclusion already. And we see that this gives fruit, this gives benefit. It helps us to realize peace and collectedness easily. And we're in a forest as well, on a mountain as well. So we train the mind, and this way we can realize seclusion, realize the seclusion of peace and samadhi. And if the mind is thinking and proliferating a lot, then the mind is no longer secluded. The mind has these sense objects and impressions and moods. And when there's a lot of sense objects coming up, then we need to use a method. We need to use a method to bring the mind to peace. For instance, we can recite Bhutto as our meditation mantra, Buddha Dhammo Sangho, where we practice giving loving kindness to ourselves. May I be well and happy. May I be well and happy. And so this is suitable particularly for dosa jarita, or one who has a character type of aversion, and one of a faith character type can recite Buddha Dhammo Sangho. And so one recites whatever one's mantra is, or meditation word, one recites that a lot, whether sitting, standing, walking, or lying down, you just keep reciting just your meditation word only. And so you can really have firm belief in this, that you do it in this way, you recite the meditation word like this. In this way, the mind doesn't think elsewhere. The mind's not fault-finding, not seeking to hurt or harm. The mind's not thinking or dwelling on things that it likes or is attracted to. Because there's all these different objects of sight, sound, taste, smell, touch, mind objects that we like and have attraction for, that we've experienced before. And then we get lost in them in the present, get lost in these moods or wanting them. So this is what we call kama tanha, a craving for sensuality. So we have a meditation word in this way, and this is able to keep the defilements under control. So we make effort, we have perseverance, not to think in unwholesome ways, not to fall into attraction or aversion, but instead to make the mind peaceful, to keep the mind in the middle, to make the mind peaceful and collected in samadhi, to have upekkha, equanimity. This is the mind that's peaceful. So we have the meditation word like this. And if we start thinking about something else, Then we have mindfulness to watch over the mind and bring the mind back to the meditation word. For instance, we take the food into our bowl or plate, we put the food into our mouth, we eat the food, and all the while we recite our meditation word. So we recite the meditation word continuously throughout the entire day. We recite the meditation word a lot. And when we do this a lot, then it's a lot of merit. It's a great deal of merit. Why is this? It's because it makes the mind peaceful in samadhi. This is the merit of bhavana, the merit of mental cultivation, which is greater than the merit from generosity or virtue. Because generosity is easier to do. And those that practice generosity but lack virtue, there's quite a lot of people like that. The one who has virtue and generosity, then this is even more merit. The mind feels cool. And this is conducive and leads to samadhi. And having samadhi, this leads to the arising of wisdom, to magga, phala, nibbana, the paths and fruits of nibbana. So when we recite the meditation word continuously, samadhi arises. So when we're tired, we recite the meditation word, and then the thoughts reduce. And when the mind becomes peaceful enough, we can just watch the in and out breathing. The body and mind feel light and at ease. This is when samadhi starts to arise. And why is this? It's because we've had mindfulness throughout the whole day. We've been reciting the meditation word all the time, reciting the mantra all the time, sitting, standing, walking, lying down. We've had mindfulness. So we have knowing, we recite Bhutto. So we cultivate the mind in this way. Whether we're putting food in the mouth, or chewing, or swallowing, we recite Bhutto. So we do this continuously. So we see that in terms of meditation practice, in terms of bhavana, there's not a lot to it. We don't need to doubt about it. And we might think, well, am I really doing it right? Am I getting the results? Am I going to get the fruits like this? If we start to think like that, then just put that to the side. Just put it down. And just do the practice. Just recite the meditation word. And in the end, we realize samadhi through this method. And there are a few days, 4 days, or 5 days. With that effort, we realize samadhi. And this is suitable for the types of characters that don't think a lot. But some individuals have a lot of doubt, and it's hard for them to do it. They recite Bhutto, and they just keep doubting. Is this the right way? Am I doing it right? One doubts about the way of Dhamma practice. And these doubts come to cover over the mind. So at this point, we need to have mindfulness to teach the mind to be careful right here. Because these doubts can really obstruct and cover over the mind. So we need to see these doubts, these thoughts of doubt. They're not me, not mine, not self. They're just the defilements, just the inner fool. So we see that these qualities of greed, aversion, delusion, these are the inner fool that come to destroy the peace and collectedness of our minds. They take our minds to ways of bad thinking, to bad places, to fearful or woeful planes of existence. So when these thoughts arise, the mind clings to them. This is my thought, I'm thinking it. And in this way, then the mind feels very hot and agitated with these unwholesome thoughts. We don't want to think like that. We learn about the meditation practice, about our meditation object, our kamatana, and then we start to think a lot. We think all kinds of strange and unusual things. That's an obstacle for our mind, to make the mind not gather in peacefulness. And then we cling to those thoughts as well, that I'm thinking this thought is mine, it's me. And we start to fear these unwholesome thoughts as well. We fear demerit, we fear unskillfulness. In this way, the mind feels like it's being tortured, like it's really suffering, really hot. So we see this and just don't worry about it. Just put it down. Don't be concerned with it. So we have mindfulness. And so we know these thoughts, if the mind's thinking unwholesome things or strange, unusual things, just know it. And contemplate these thoughts, know them as unwholesome, and just put them down. Just let them go. Because we want wholesomeness, we want skillfulness. That's what we want. But we cling to that as self as well. We take the mind as mine. We take the thoughts as mine. We want to think only good thoughts, but are you able to do that? So when we're starting out with the Dhamma practice, we start to learn about unwholesomeness and wholesomeness and what they're like. And then we have this idea that thinking unwholesome thoughts, or we learn that these unwholesome thoughts can lead to hell. And this fear arises. We don't want unwholesome thoughts. But it's not possible for us not to think unwholesome thoughts at all, because we're just at the beginning stages. So whether you're thinking a wholesome thought or an unwholesome thought, just contemplate it. If you think a wholesome thought, then you can act on that. You can follow these wholesome thoughts and act in terms of body, speech, or mind. And if you think an unwholesome thought, just throw it away. Just discard it. Because you're not able to think only wholesome thoughts. Because what's very wholesome is having right view. That's good already. So if you have a wholesome thought, then you act on it. If you have an unwholesome thought, just put it down. Just let it go. So it's like this. So in our daily lives, in living in society, using various things in the world, so the bad things, we just discard them, we cut them away, put them down, just like an old cloth that's not suitable to wear anymore. It's just not clean, it would make us feel ill. So we just cut it away, we put it away, throw it out. So we have wisdom in this way. So we manage our lives, manage our work, manage the things that we use in the world by using this wisdom quality. And we use wisdom in terms of eating as well. If the food is bad for us, not suitable for our body, then we don't eat it. If we eat something and it makes us sick, then we don't eat that anymore. We don't follow this mood in the mind of wanting. And so in terms of the mind, it's the same way. If we think something unwholesome, we just put it down. We let it go. The great masters taught like this. It's the same as eating meat. When we meet with a bone, we're not able to chew it. If it's certain types of fish bones, maybe we're able to chew it, but pork or chicken bones, they're too hard. So we just throw them out. Our human body is not able to chew through it. The bones are stronger than our teeth. And so we have intelligence to just throw it out. So we don't think a lot, but we need to have this intelligence. So with wholesomeness, we act on it, we do it. With unwholesomeness, we just throw it away. It's like building a house in the forest. We go to build a house in the forest and we take the good trees that are strong, good quality, and straight to make the posts and the pillars of the house. And this way the house can last for a long time. And the trees that are no good, we just don't use them. So the trees that are not able to be used to make a house, we just let them go. So it's like gold as well. If we get some gold and we see that it's mixed with a lot of other minerals, but we only want the gold because that's what has value to us, so we separate it out. So we need to have mindfulness and wisdom. We need to know what the wise person is like, to have wisdom, not to associate with the inner fool, which is this greed, aversion, and delusion. And this greed, aversion, and delusion we've had in the mind for a very long time already. So when we come to practice the Dhamma, we have to meet with it. Greed, aversion, and delusion will arise. So we have to think and contemplate that this life of ours must end in death. Having been born, we must die. And that this body is completely full of illness. It's filled with the not beautiful. So we contemplate to keep letting go, letting go, letting go. Do you see? Without the breath, the body just dies right there. The body is something that must fall apart, must degrade, must die. So all these things we experience, like sight, sound, taste, smell, touch, mind, objects, like the various sounds that we hear, they arise based on physical form, and we might perceive them as beautiful or not beautiful. And so we observe these phenomena, and we see that the body has to meet with old age, sickness, and death. And then when it gets really sick like that, then it just has a great deal of suffering. It's torturous. So we see that the days and nights are relentlessly passing by, passing by. And old age, sickness, and death are constantly coming ever closer, ever closer. Illness is coming closer, arising all the time. So one day we get this or that illness. And so in this moment, we really establish ourselves in the practice of mental cultivation, in bhavana. We meditate a lot, train the mind a lot, have a lot of mindfulness. We practice to bring the mind to peace through contemplation. And contemplate that old age, sickness, and death are normal. Having died already, we see the not beautiful nature of the body. That this body is simply full of illness. In this way, insight and tranquility can arise. We see that death is close. It's not far away. It's not that we will die for sure in 50 or 100 years. It's just not sure. It's possible that we could die today. And so when we contemplate in this way, then greed, aversion, and delusion that are very strong in the mind can reduce, become lighter and thinner. So we bring the mind to peace and samadhi. We think that this life must end in death, that we don't know how much life we have left, whether it's 1 second, 1 minute, 1 hour. And so we do goodness and wholesomeness in the present. We do skillful actions in the present. So we do our Dhamma practice. We see the drawbacks of these conditioned formations. We see the drawbacks of this body. We see that it's not sure. The body changes, and we experience suffering in the mind. So we practice, we train, we establish mindfulness and wisdom in the mind. We see that these qualities of virtue, collectedness, and wisdom, this is the wise person. So this is meeting with the Dhamma of the Buddha. This is meeting with the wise person. As we see that we've had the good fortune to meet with these teachings. It's like Venerable Ajahn Mun, Venerable Ajahn Chah, they've given us these practices, these teachings. And so we've been able to meet with the Dhamma. And so now it's up to us to do the practice, to pay homage through our practice. And when we're able to practice and pay homage through our practice, then we can meet with success in our practice. We can meet with the Buddha, just like the great masters before us, like Venerable Ajahn Mun, Venerable Ajahn Chah. They practiced to the point of arahantship and came and taught the Dhamma. And so we take their teachings as our primary practice, as our foundation, to give rise to wisdom, to give rise to knowing. Because they taught that this materiality and mentality, it's something that we have to let go of. We're not able to cling to it. It's actually not self in truth. It's not me or mine. You are yours in truth. When we lack wisdom, then these thoughts arise. And whether the thoughts are wholesome or unwholesome, we cling to them as mine. So whether it's wholesome, whether it's unwholesome, we need to let go of that as well. Because if we cling to the wholesome as self, we cling to that skillfulness and think, I really am good, I really am doing good, then people come and criticize us, then we feel upset and agitated. We can feel that, well, I am right, I am good, I'm doing good. So this is the defilement of attachment arising. So we have to be careful right there. So we're living together here on this retreat. So may you have harmony, may you watch over the mind, may you train the mind. So during this 8-day period, may you really set your hearts on this practice. We see that some people have been crossed over the ocean to come here, come from far away, come from Europe, come from China, from Singapore, Malaysia, Thailand, and then online as well, over 100 people from a great many countries. And so we see that all of you have this firm intent to practice. So may you really set your hearts on it. May you have effort, perseverance. May you have patient endurance, and don't think a lot. Just know your thoughts, have mindfulness, and teach your mind right there. Teach your mind that all these objects of mind, all these sense impressions, they're unstable, impermanent, they're not sure. Know them as not self, not me or mine. Know the sense impressions as not self. And see it as Dhamma. See that the Dhammas are just Dhammas. They're not a me, a mine, a you or yours, not a self. And so one is able to put them down, let them go, bit by bit. So this is walking the path of wisdom in order to reach samadhi. And then once samadhi arises, then wisdom arises again to a deeper level. So this is the way to know and see the Dhamma, that which we really want to know and see. So we see the Dhamma, we see not self, we're able to let go. Whatever it is that we're clinging to now, we're able to put it down. This is seeing with wisdom, this is seeing the Dhamma. So may you all set your hearts on this. May you all grow in blessings.